Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly. I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But I love eating people. I love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree?
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. I'm the great and powerful Mr. A.
And I'm Jay, clone 15.
Beep, beep. I think I'm going to do...
Meep, beep.
Beep, beep.
Beep, beep. Are all my clones robots?
I don't know. It just, whenever you say it, it makes me think of that.
That's why I was questioning. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of them are, though.
Yeah, yeah. Relaxed episode.
Ooh, I like relaxation.
Relaxation station.
Yeah, that too.
Gosh.
I don't know. All right, what's the, Crypts of the Corn podcast. Welcome back, everybody. We got a live show coming up June 14th.
Yeah.
With famous author, handsome, great swimmer, homeowner Michael Thompson. We're really looking forward to that. We're having discussions on UFOs, and Michael will be talking about sea monsters.
Yeah, Ada Bowling Alley. Was it?
Narita Lanes at 7 p.m.
Oh.
What?
Isn't it 5 to 9?
Oh, 5 to 9. So right in the middle is 7 p.m. when all the action really takes off.
Yeah, 5 to 9. You can buy tickets at the door, but you got to be there by 5.
I guess that's
around 5, I guess.
Bowling league starts at 7. It's just ingrained in my head.
Yeah, like burnt. Everything at the bowling alley starts at 7.
Pretty much, yeah.
It opens at 6, but everything starts at 7.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be super, super a lot of fun. All of our Ohio, Indiana folks and Michigan folks, you want to come out and hang out for the night?
Yeah.
It's going to be a ball. I'm excited for it.
Oh, me too. I'm very looking forward to it. We're going to have a little bit new additions to our presentations too. So for all of us that have seen us before and want to come see us again, you never get the same show twice when you come see Crypts of the Corn live.
Partially because I don't remember.
Well, that's true.
This is new to me too, even though I made the slideshow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool looking.
It is pretty cool looking.
Yeah. So yeah, come out, hang out. It's going to be fun. You want a book? Buy a book, go to our website or Amazon if you're international. We got tons of new t-shirt designs, and there's more coming.
Mm-hmm.
For all the shows, including DW Conspiracy Check, you just go to our little website and you can get it there.
Cryptsofthecorn.com.
Yeah. Anything else?
And then the Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree. Just stay tuned. If you're not following the page on Facebook, the Bigfoot Jamboree 2 page, you get all the latest info and updates with that.
Oh, yeah.
So we got... with all their speakers and vendors lined up, it's gearing up to be a fun one.
It's going
to
be really good. Tickets are about half sold out for the VIP section.
Yep.
So you want to get your ticket below if you want to be a VIP.
Yep. Get it ASAP before it's too late.
Mm-hmm. All right. You ready?
I was born ready.
Today's episode is a listener-submitted one.
Ooh, those are my favorite.
Tree intelligence. I wanted just to dive into that a little more.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about intelligence. We're also going to talk about genetic memory, unlearned memory, and a lot of the differences in between.
I thought you said relaxed.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sensing sarcasm.
It was.
Yeah, this ain't relaxed. This is, it's already making me think. All right.
Mm-hmm. It's because my chair is leaning back because I broke two chairs this week and I don't have a chair.
That's what this broken bolt's from.
Yeah. No, it was during our D&D campaign with our Patreon group.
Oh, yeah, which I guess we mentioned that. We're doing a D&D campaign on Patreon. It just kicked off. We just recorded episode one as we're recording this today. So that should be out, I think, by the time this recording comes out on Patreon.
Oh, yeah. It'll be out by then.
Yep. We're going to do it once a month, our Patreon D&D campaign that takes place in Wolverville.
Wolverville.
Yep. So it's the day one was pretty fun.
I had a ball.
So if I guess if you're already on our Patreon, that's something to look forward to the next future. Because I don't know how long it's going to last, how many months this is going to take. But it's starting off fun.
Depends on if you guys all die in the next campaign or not.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be really quick.
Exactly.
So we're going to start with an article.
All right.
It's all about Susan Smird. I think it's how you pronounce her name.
Okay.
Incredible researcher. The article is by Richard Schmeifman and Mike Fiscatelli.
Okay.
The article is called "Mother Trees Are Intelligent, They Learn, and They Remember." It was all about Susan's research.
Okay.
A few researchers in pop culture impact of Susan Smead. University of British Columbia ecologist is the model for Pacific Western Ford, a controversial tree scientist in Richard Powell's 2019 Pulitzer Prize winning novel, The Overstory. Smird's work was inspired by James Cameron's visions of godlike trees of soul in the 2009 box office hit Avatar. So she started looking into that kind of idea. You know what the Tree of Souls is?
I'm not sure, but I'm just going to guess. Is it like the Deku tree from Zelda?
I don't know what that is, so.
Oh, okay.
What sure.
I don't know. What's the Tree of Souls?
No, so it's the massive, like, godlike tree in Avatar that connects the whole planet, like, all the life, and that's why their little, like, their external brain stems can connect to all kinds of things.
Okay.
But when you tie into that, you're tied into the whole planet, and it pops up all around the planet.
So it's like if Bob was a big tree.
Yeah.
Okay, makes sense. So if Bob took over the tree that was standing where the Devil's Tower is now before it got cut down.
There you go.
That would be it.
Single dumbest episode ever.
Oh, well, season one.
Was it?
I think so.
I have no idea.
Season one or two. Giant trees.
So what captured the public imagination of Smird's findings is that trees are extremely social beings. They exchange nutrients, help one another out, and communicate about insect pests and other environmental threats.
All through their roots.
Mm-hmm.
We learned that from, I don't think it was the giant trees episode, but we talked about that.
Bob's episode.
Bob's, yeah, the root communication.
What was that? The Fungus Among Us? I think it was the name of that episode.
I think something like that, yeah.
So previous ecologists have focused on what happens above ground, but she focused on radioactive isotopes of carbon to trace how trees share resources and information with another through the interactive, interconnected network of
roots,
fungus.
Oh, I just wanted to say roots.
We've really dived into the fungus side of this tree organization.
Right.
We're going to look at it from the tree side.
Okay.
So the colonizes the root system. In her recent work, she has found the evidence that trees recognize their own kin and favor them when the lion's share of their bounty, especially the saplings that are most vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about that a lot already, but we'll dive into it fully. In her first book, Finding the Mother Tree, Discovering the Wisdom of the Forest, she released, she argues that forests are not collections of isolated organisms, but rather webs of constantly evolving relationships. Humans have been unraveling these webs for years. Such destructive practices such as clear cutting and fire suppression. Now that they are causing, stuff with climate change, they advance faster than trees can adapt, leading to species die-offs and sharp increase in infestations by pests such as bark beetles, which have devastated the North American forest.
Mm. What, are they just eating all the trees up?
Yeah, when they dig into the bark of the trees and they kill them through that process.
Okay, makes sense.
So she's saying that these... So far, what we've gotten into with her work is that these trees are massive interwebbed communities.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe not every tree in the forest is connected, but there, like, maybe there's only 7 sets of trees. So when you start cutting out one, you know, you can kill off the whole section of forest, and the trees that rebound really struggle because they don't have that knowledge from past generations of how to deal with these pests or environmental stresses.
These factors, yeah. Okay.
Questions or thoughts so far?
Well, and then, like you just said, we're clear-cutting and being extremely destructive to this. So what kind of effects are we having on their web, you know, their internal communication web?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely destroying it.
Mm-hmm.
She says people make many actions to help forests. The world's largest traceable carbon sink recovers and is doing so, along with her most uncontroversial ideas. She's a pretty controversial ecologist.
Okay.
Pivoting roles of the ancient giant she calls mother trees, playing the ecosystem and their needs for zealous protection. So these mother trees, we always called them in our line of work when I worked in this kind of stuff, forest kings.
Okay.
There's normally forest, actual forest. So Ohio has very, very few forests, if any.
It's all gone. It's on new growth.
I would argue that we don't have any true forest left.
Oh, you mean, okay, just forest in general.
Forest, true forest. Mm-hmm. We have what's called woods, which is the step down.
Oh, yeah. Woods dotted between farm fields.
But even in like Hocking and stuff like that, that stuff wasn't there 100 years ago.
Oh, okay.
It was still coal. It was still mining. You know, it was clear cut. If anybody doesn't believe me, look up the historic picture of Leaning Rock. There in Clear Creek, where it's a forest, they say. It was all dirt and field and exposed. It was just sitting there. Yeah.
Wow.
There was nothing. There was nothing in the picture, not a single plant.
Wow.
So it's very new, relatively speaking.
What, did we clear cut everything first?
Yeah.
And then mine everything?
Yeah.
And now it's just coming back?
Because it was strip mining. It was pulling the layers off. And
extremely destructive.
Mm-hmm. So mother trees kind of fit the same thing, where she's saying in the ecosystem. That they are the grandmothers of these organizational systems inside a forest.
Okay.
So these are basically, think of them as nutrient sinks. Think of them as governors, and think of them as protectors. You know, these massive trees shade, protect, their root systems hold together massive swaths of forest, and their knowledge sinks as well.
Right.
Where they're holding information from hundreds of years, depending on how old they are. Plus, when we get to genetic knowledge, maybe even further back.
Okay.
Questions, thoughts?
I'm just trying to think what I can compare it to. The only thing I can come up with is like, which I don't like the comparison, but like the chips in the new cars that kind of control everything or kind of regulate everything. So if something goes wrong, they will at least inform you, or they'll tell you what it is so you can fix it. I don't know. That's just what I thought of.
So I have some actual quotes from an interview. So I'll read both parts.
Okay.
Like the interviewee and the interviewer.
Gotcha.
So the interviewer asks, people may be surprised that you grew up in a logging family, not exactly a bunch of tree huggers. How did your childhood in rural British Columbia prepare you for your life as a scientist? She says, spending time in the forest as I did as a child, you know, everything is intertwined and overlapping. Things growing right up next to each other. To me, it was always this incredible connection of this place, even though I wouldn't be able to articulate it as a child. British Columbia today, loggers sacrifice birches and broadleaf trees when they are competing for sun and nutrients for their fir harvest. So that's another type of tree. The interviewer is basically saying, loggers are clear-cutting birch and broadleaf trees because they're competing with their more desired trees.
Okay, gotcha. So
they're wasting those trees because they want the fir trees.
They want them to grow bigger, yeah.
Yeah. As a young government tree scientist, your discovery that the birch were actually feeding the fir saplings or seedlings, keeping them alive, she says. That's right. I was sent out to find out why so many firs in these tree plantations were not doing well as the healthy young firs in natural forest environments. Other things we found that in natural forest, that more birch trees shade the Douglas fir saplings. The more carbon in the soil for photosynthesizing sugars, the birch provide them through the fungal network below ground.
Okay.
Birch are also full of nitrogen, which turns to support bacteria that do work in cycling nutrients and creating antibodies and other chemicals in the soil to counter pathogens to help produce a balanced ecosystem.
Wow.
So the firs, basically she found out, is the fir saplings cannot survive very well, even in,
like, on their own.
Yeah. Without the birch.
Right.
The birch, whether they purposely do it or just a byproduct of them, you know, being a species that are found together forever,
mm-hmm.
they need each other. Or at least the firs extremely need the birch in their early years.
Right, yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
So these plantations that killed all of the birch off to raise their firs, and their firs aren't doing well.
They're struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You got to imitate what happens in the natural environment for the best results, in my opinion.
So the interviewer asked, but aren't the soil bacteria creating the antibiotics for themselves, not for the trees? How does this help the trees? Birch supply carbon and nutrients to the soil, excluded by the roots and mitozoas. I'm sorry. Now I can't even say the word right. The mycelia networks.
Okay.
This provides energy for the bacteria in the soil to grow. One species of bacteria that grows in this layer, or in the rhizosphere of the birch roots, is the phosphorescent pseudodonts. It's conducted lab studies that show that this bacteria, plated with Amarilia oystera, a pathogenic fungus that attacks firs, to a lesser extent birch trees as well, inhibits the growth of this fungus.
Hmm. So without the birch being there, this fungus wants to grow?
So it will attack the birch too.
Yeah, right.
So the birch produces basically the carbon and stuff. There is this pseudomound bacterium that grows off of the supplies the birch gives. That bacteria does not let the fungus grow.
Right. It protects the trees. Gotcha. Okay.
As a byproduct.
So it's like an antibody to the fungus, in a sense, that the birch trees make.
Yes.
All right. Cool. So the birch trees are a lot more important than just...
At least for the relationship with the firs.
Right. Exactly. They're not just there to make a fire starter.
Yeah. So next question. You also find that birch trees give sugars to firs in the summer throughout the mycelia networks. And the firs return the favor by seeding foots to birch in the spring and the fall, which is when the birch lack leaves.
Mm.
Sorry, sending food to the birches.
Right.
In the spring and the fall, which is when the birch lack leaves. So she says, isn't that cool? Some scientists are having trouble with this. Why would the trees send photosynthetic sugars to another species? And to me, that's obvious. They are helping each other and creating a healthy community that benefits everyone. So, yeah.
Maybe we should all take a little lesson.
Yeah, because there are a bunch of biologists and ecologists that don't understand this, that it's very much almost the capitalistic view of these organisms.
Is it one they take?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or I keep everything I produce. I only produce for
me. Right.
So why would these young saplings, these firs, try to feed the birches when the birches don't have leaves? Because in the summer, when they need help, the birch is the one that's going to help them.
They provide it, yeah. So co-inhabiting.
Yeah, it's sharing. It's sharing the load.
Mm-hmm. And like, again, we should all as humans take note of what nature does and do our best to imitate it.
100%. Next question. Are you saying that forest communities are in some respect more entangled and more effect than our own societies? And even ask if there's any lessons there. They already kind of picked up on where the interviewer was going. She says, right, the forest diversity. Studies showed that biodiversity leads to stability, leads to resilience. It makes it easier to see why. Species collaborate. There are synergetic systems. One plant is high in photosynthetic capabilities, and it fuels all the soil bacteria that fixes nitrogen, while the others are deep-rooted plants that go and bring up water in times of drought, which is shared with the nitrogen-fixing plants, because the nitrogen-fixing plants need a lot of water to carry out these activities. So suddenly the whole productive system of the ecosystem goes up.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the more species, the more diversity,
the better for everybody.
The better for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that.
Mm-hmm. And they, next question. Because the species are helping each other out, she says, yes, this is such an important concept that we all need to learn and embrace. This is one that has evaded us as humans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of like what I said earlier, basically.
Yeah, no, you're right.
We're just getting away from it.
There's a quote that, how does it exactly go, basically? When humanity's healed or whatever, when old men plant trees that they will never know the shade of.
Yeah, I like that. I've seen that, like a little cartoon of that, basically. Yeah,
there's, and I've seen it carved and set in places and stuff like that. Basically, it means if you're doing stuff
for the benefit of others in the future,
that you're never, ever going to see the results of,
mm-hmm.
but you're doing it for the good of people that may or not even be born yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, a sign that society is doing well. Any questions?
Not so much questions, but observations. I think society is lacking that right now, majorly. But I think it's very important. It's a good lesson to learn from nature and just in general, just to stay connected with each other. And diversity is good. We want people who are different, especially around you. Like, I don't know, you want as much different people as you can get in your life, in my opinion. Because they have a lot of different things to offer and share with you.
Yeah.
Maya.
So she says, or the interviewer, so cooperation is equally important to, if not more important than, competitiveness. So do we need to revise our views on the whole, how basically nature operates? She says, I think we do. Charles Darwin also understood the importance of cooperation. He knew that plants live together in communities, and he wrote about it. It's just that it never got to the same traction as his natural selection based on competition theory.
Hmm.
So keep that in mind.
Interesting.
Charles Darwin had more than one theory of how species adapt and change over time.
But only one is really...
talked about ever.
Mm-hmm. That was taught to us in school as mm-hmm. we were little kids, very impressionable little kids.
So nowadays, we look at things like the human genome and realize a lot of our DNA is viral or bacterial in origin. We now know that ourselves are consortiums of species that have developed together. And that's like our gut biome. There's literally organisms that live in our blood that help us continue.
Right.
Like humans, and I don't think humans understand that, you cannot survive without thousands of other species inside your body doing what they do.
Mm-hmm. The macro influences. The micro influences the macro.
Mm-hmm. So a consortium of species. It's become more mainstream to think that way. Likewise, forests are multi-species organisms. Aboriginal cultures know the linkage and interactions of how sophisticated they were. Humans haven't always had this reductionist approach. It's the development of Western scientists that have led us to this.
Okay. So at least we're learning about it.
Yeah. And keep in mind, she is a controversial figure in this study. When looking into this episode, that she does have ideas that I personally don't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I know, she's not a bad scientist in any way, shape, or form. She's done a lot of work.
Right, yeah. I mean, it sounds like she's at least putting her heart into it.
And yeah, no matter what, I think she has a good heart or good intentions.
Good intentions, yeah.
So, next question. Do you mean that Western scientists focus too much on the individual organism and not enough on the function of larger communities? And before I read her answer, I'll answer, yeah, they have. For Ohio, the DNR focuses exclusively on walleye,
mm-hmm.
and they can't figure out why every 5 years the walleye population collapses because they starve themselves to death. And then, because they're looking at one animal and only managing for one animal.
Right.
When there's hundreds of animals that it takes to make a healthy ecosystem.
And you know that firsthand from your old job.
Yes. No, it's,
that was your job, is rating the fish or seeing the fish that were in there. So you
can't say the site or the place or who we did this for. But there was one location. So a famous fish in Lake Erie, for example, is called an emerald shiner. Billions of them. There's probably quintillions of them, if not, you know, trillion. I don't know. There's literally, they make up the base of the vertebrate food chain. Mm-hmm. So we had a site where we caught 13,500 meters of electrofishing.
Okay.
4 years later, so this was the highest point of the walleye cycle, we got three.
Wow.
Not 3,000.
Three individuals. Three.
And almost no baby perch.
Oh.
Because the walleye were managed too hard, and there's too many of them, and they were eating
everything.
Everything.
Mm. So the walleye population boomed, and everything else suffered.
Artificially. The walleye population boomed artificially.
Right. Hmm. So just be careful influencing nature, I guess.
Tropic degradation.
It's like we shouldn't be doing as much as we are right now that changes nature to control it.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's like it'll fight back.
Yeah, and I mean, keep in mind, we need the planet. The planet doesn't need us.
That's true.
All right, so her answer to the our scientists focusing too much on individual organisms and not enough on larger communities. She says, yes, I think there is a progress to the science. We've started very simple. We looked at single organism, then we looked at single species, and now we're starting to look at communities of species, and then the ecosystems as a whole, and even higher levels of organization. The Western science has gone from a simple to complex, or is in the process of. It changes naturally as we become more sophisticated with ourselves. It's become more holistic.
All right.
Or it's becoming more holistic, sorry.
Yes, that's the way it should be. Getting back to the basics.
Yeah. The interviewer asked, so you're using the word intelligent to describe trees is controversial, but it seems like you're making an even more radical assertion that there is an intelligence in the ecosystem as a whole. She says, you use the word controversial. That comes from the using of human terms to describe highly evolved systems that work, but actually have structures that are very, very similar to the human brain. They're not brains, yet they have all the characteristics of intelligence. They have behaviors and responses. They have predictions. They have learning and the archiving of memories. That being said, though, these networks are chemicals like glutamates, which are amino acids that serve as neurotransmitters in our brains. So the trees are sending glutamates to each other, which is as neurotransmitters, which is the exact same thing humans use in our neural system to share information to ourselves.
So it's like the trees are, all of them together combined, are the brain.
Yes.
They're one brain.
I called the system intelligent because it's the most accurate analog word that I can find in the English language to describe what I'm seeing.
Which makes sense. And how do you, you know, measure intelligence in something?
Mm-hmm.
You know, with humans, you got to take a test. You got to read questions and answer them, multiple choice, and see where you end up, you know, your IQ. But how do you do that to a tree? You can't. It doesn't mean the tree's dumb.
So there's a chart or a drawing or like a famous old cartoon about this.
Huh?
That, now, me and you have talked about this hundreds of times when we talk about species that may be on other planets or species that live here and cryptids and all that stuff. Intelligence is, humans will always, if, let's say there is life out in space. Let's say there's planets and there's life and there's stuff out there.
All right.
Humans will always have trouble recognizing intelligence because if it's even an inkling different than ours.
Right.
Which is what we do. It's just how humans do. So there's an old cartoon where it's an elephant, a tiger, a fish, a monkey, and a snail. And there's a test taker coming out. He's like, okay, today's test is whoever, you got to climb this tree.
Okay.
So only one of the animals can do that.
Right.
So the test for intelligence is climbing the tree, but the monkey's going to be the only one that passes the test.
Right. Doesn't mean he's the smartest.
Yes.
Just he has that ability.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's basically the surmising of this.
Makes sense.
So some people are challenging your use of the word memory. What evidence do you have that trees are actually remembering what happened to them? And she says, memory is the past events as stored in the tree's rings and in the DNA of seeds. The width and density of these rings, as well as the natural abundance of certain isotopes, holds the memories in the growing conditions of previous years, such as weather, whether it was wet and dry, the weather of nearby trees, or how they did, if it was any blowovers, if any death, creating space for trees to grow faster, et cetera, et cetera. So the actual rings of the tree are storing isotopic information.
Wow.
So it's halfway between our brain, which is
the gray matter.
Well, no, we store it chemically. We store memories chemically. And then you refire it to remember something.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
You're just a walking bag of chemicals and electricity.
Yeah, basically. And salt.
And a lot of salt.
Yeah.
Which is a chemical.
Walking bag of salt and chemicals. And what was the other thing you said?
Electricity.
Electricity, that's right.
So they do the same thing, but it's more, it's kind of halfway between us and maybe a computer.
Okay.
Like a laser disc, like, or a DVD or anything like that. Where
floppy disc.
Yeah, floppy disc.
Trees are old, remember?
But I'm using the circle.
Oh, okay.
Where it's actually sketching in information.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And then you, when you need to recall something, you fire that back up.
Like a record.
A record.
Yeah, like a vinyl.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. That's the rings you're seeing.
Exactly. We should play a tree.
So she said, in the seed's DNA, evolves through a mutation as well as endopathic DNA, reflects genetic adaptations to changing environmental conditions. That's that first. Empagenic is how you say it. Empagenic.
Okay.
That's genetic knowledge.
Oh, okay, okay.
That's being passed down memories through genes.
They say if you take a tree and you cut it, you know, a nice thin slice, and you put it on a record player and spin it, it'll say, like, you hear a certain ring. I'm thirsty. It's really drawn out. You got to play it in double speed to hear it.
I just thought I was going to play like Rocky Top or something.
That's funnier. That's a lot funnier. All right, let's go with that.
That's how they discovered it.
Good old Rocky Top. That you see, like, yeah, they didn't write the Appalachian songs. They were written by the trees. They just played them.
Older than the trees.
See, John Denver, he knew it. Soft disclosure.
So yeah, that's her study, and then I got more on the genetic memory side of stuff.
Yeah.
So any questions about her or the study that she's done, and she's still working. Her stuff is extremely fascinating.
Yeah.
She'd be one I'd be very, very interested to reach out to just to have her on the show.
Maybe we should reach out.
She does interviews. So I'll probably try to do that this week and reach out to her because I've been reading a lot of her research for this and it's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
Personally, I go, so the other side of this argument is who's actually in control of the trees or the fungus.
Okay.
And when we did the Bob episode, our fungal neighbors, we did it from the fungus intelligence.
Right.
Controlling the trees. Mm. And she's definitely much more of the trees using the fungal network.
Right. And I mean, we both could be right.
That's the thing. After reading a lot of her research, I think that's closer.
Yeah.
To accurate. I think that her view is you can't look at them as separate species or separate individuals.
That's what she's saying?
Yeah. Basically, okay. That's a watered down version of what she's saying.
Okay.
Her once again, she's several books on the subject.
Right. We should get her on here.
I'm at least going to get her two books about this subject.
Yeah.
But what she's saying is that it's a folly or a older way of thinking when you only look at these as an individual organism or as a species. So if you're only looking at the birch trees, when the birch and the fir are so intertangled that they are one thing,
mm-hmm.
even though they are two genetic different species.
Right.
They are one thing that are holding each other together.
Makes sense.
In balance. So it's just a newer way to do some ecological studies. And I'll tell you that when I worked in this kind of stuff, there was a hard, hard focus on a lot of the single species stuff.
Seems like that in a lot of fields too.
Yeah. And it's, I think she's right. She said it's just the older way of thinking. Some levels of science just haven't caught up yet.
Yeah.
The company I worked with, basically, we had to do studies certain ways for the certain things we were doing.
Mm.
So a lot of the research, like I talked about the eel survey where we were never going to find eels because the company that hired us didn't want us to find eels.
Right.
Because it would be very bad for them if we found eels.
Yeah.
So the structure of the study was purposely designed to not find eels.
There's a way. I mean, that's just life.
Like running gill nets. You're not going to catch an eel in a gill net.
Right. I mean, that... Everything is just the way you present it or manipulate it. Everything in life.
So yeah, I think her theories are very, very interesting. And it's very nice to have, you know, high level scientists that are kind of digging into more controversial stuff.
Mm-hmm. Which shouldn't even have that word attached to it. Controversial.
Yeah, I know. I agree. And like she right. said, you know,
you're just repeating the words in the article, yeah. But like, why is that controversial to explore ideas?
Yeah.
Huh. It's just if it goes against the mainstream dogma, then that's controversial. If it goes against what the man says is what they taught you in elementary school in science class. That's the only thing that's real and true. Everything beyond that is controversial. I think if when they call things controversial, you should flip the mirror on it and, oh, maybe what we were taught is maybe controversial if you really look at it.
So, I don't even remember if you remember what I texted you a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I remember.
So, that's how we're going to connect it to Faye and Bigfoot and all that stuff. But before we get to that, I have one more article. And before we even get to that article, we're going to go to our ad break.
Right. Let me fire up the motor here on this off-board motor on this 8-foot aluminum boat.
There you go.
And let's go fishing. You know? Join the Future Anglers of Ohio and Indian Lake. Or Future Indian Lake of Ohio. There we go.
Yes.
F-A-I-L-O.
Yes.
So,
links below.
The links are below. Take some kids fishing.
Yeah. And then if you want to donate anything to them.
Yes.
Because they give all kinds of stuff out to kids.
Gear, fishing gear, shirts, clothes, like anything a kid needs to go fishing, they provide it. And it's all 100%.
Even if it costs like $5 to them or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The contact information for them is below because it's an extremely good cause. They do good work. I know
it's donated to the kids too.
Yeah, all of it.
I think last fishing derby, what did he give away? Those, he gave two ice fishing poles. Or no, that was during our ice fishing thing, but it was donated through the Future Anglers of Ohio.
Because I donated one of them.
Yeah.
And somebody else, a bait company had donated another.
Like, it was awesome stuff. I was like, well, can I get in on this ice crawl competition? I want to win one of these. But yeah, they do awesome stuff, awesome work. Future Anglers of Indian Lake, Ohio.
All right.
Well, things are looking good for the Jamboree this year so far.
True, but I wonder if there's anything else that can make this event even more awesomer.
Well, there's really only one person that could be the judge of that.
Hey, that's a great idea. Let's give him a call.
Two Whoops and Tree Knocks. Sasquatch is there.
Hey guys, what's up?
Well, we're going over the schedule for the Jamboree, but we wanted to see what you think.
All right, well, let me take a look here real fast. Okay, so the VIP tickets are $50 a piece, and that gets you into the Friday night dinner and meet and greet with the speakers and special guests. Monster costume contest? Well, that looks good. A free family room with activities for the kids? Well, that's outstanding. A Bigfoot calling contest? Of course, it looks like you're going to have a lot of food. Oh, good, and you'll have the craft vendors back. Last year, I actually found a Squatchtopus. Well, let's see who the speakers are this year. Oh, you have Connor and Alexis Fiden, and Randy Bauer. Ron Murphy, outstanding. Oh, good, you guys will be speaking. Which J-Clone is going to be there? That's my question. And Tony Merkel as well. Oh, good, you're going to have Jake Dressel back. He was excellent last year. And Brian Wolf. Why does that name sound familiar? Well, I have to tell you, gentlemen, having gone to a number of these events, this looks like it's going to be one of the best ones of the year. Say, will Tiny Toes be there?
Tiny Toes?
Yeah, the little guy that was there last year.
Oh, you mean Paul.
Yep. Tiny Toes will be there as well.
Tiny Toes.
Cool. Well, this all sounds fantastic, guys. And I look forward to seeing you there. Until then, Squatch Dust!
Bye!
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Squatch Dust.
Makes me laugh every time.
Is the Squatch Dust actually Flavors of the Forest?
It is.
I knew it.
It is.
Flavors of the Forest. Get to flavorsforest.com/corn and get you some of the best freeze-dried garlic on the market today.
It is the best.
Oh, yeah. It is the best. With multiple flavors offered, it goes great on any food, especially pizza. If you like pizza, which if you don't, you're probably in some like satanic group, I'd imagine. If you don't like pizza.
I didn't know where you were going with that.
I don't know either. I'm just kind of going. But if you do, you're going to love Flavors of the Forest. Get some, put it on your pizza, and let us know what you think.
In my head, I went to communist. That's what I do all the time. The
same difference.
Yeah, I guess. But no, it's just one of my go-to words.
It is, yes.
Because I learned that. I didn't know what the word meant when I was a kid.
Right.
But I remember my grandpa calling somebody that. And it was the one word I think I was allowed to repeat.
That makes sense.
So out of the words that he would yell at people. So
it's ingrained in your brain. Mm-hmm. You can use this.
So new study reveals that plants pass down genetic memories. Are you excited?
Oh, yeah.
The scientists identified. Now, I'm not going to go into a ton of detail with this. But it's the Cold Springs Harbor Laboratory.
Okay.
With a myriad of professors that have investigated this. Rob Mersine, Lamore Johnson, Tora are the two main people in this. But they had a myriad of lab help and all that stuff with this study. So I'm just going to kind of take it apart because this is, I mean, way over than anything we need to get into for this.
Okay.
Because it really talks about stuff, I mean, over my head with this.
Okay.
Because it's just nuts.
Don't worry. I'll sort it out for you.
Yeah, thank you. Do you want to read it then?
I can.
No, it's fine.
All right.
But no, basically it's saying that exposed parts of DNA of these, so of trees and stuff that have dealt with long or developed systems.
Okay.
So these ancient forests, they have trees that have, even though that individual tree hasn't survived like fires or droughts or anything like that. There's a giant piece of information stored in there about those events.
Okay.
So it may be thousands of generations old.
Mm-hmm. Just hanging. It's the intelligence or that information still there.
Yes, it's storing the information. So they compared the DNA for these cells, basically, to other seeds of the same species where it's not, it doesn't have the same information. So it's not all the trees have this information. All these seeds, all the species has this information.
Okay.
It is that that specific group has developed this information.
Okay.
Clear cutting and then growing back and stuff like that, or replanting and stuff like that, you'll lose all this information.
Hmm.
But yeah, there's, I can always, histone memory and empogenetic inheritance. Experiments revealed how these chains of histones preserve these controls across generations. The team showed that the histones found only in the pollen of or the resistant to some diseases act as a placeholder for cell division. It remembers where the histone was during the plant's development and retains the memory for the next generation. Plants not be alone here. Humans also depend on this protein to maintain DNA methylation. The new discovery helps explain how proteins keep our genomes functional and intact.
Hmm.
So for us, what I guess they're getting at more closely is that this preserves our DNA or our genomes. It helps, this process helps keep everything how it's supposed to.
Okay.
So when it's disrupted, that's when problems happen, like cancers and that kind of stuff.
Is that like when those experiments where they had like DNA and like this, like in water, and then they took the water away or something and it recreated the shape? I'm trying to remember exactly how that went. Do you know what I'm talking about?
A water memory?
Yeah, water memory, basically.
That's different. It's nothing to do with DNA.
Oh, okay.
Water does have memory.
But is it like that, where it kind of retains that structure?
Sure. Yeah.
And then so when things.
That'd be a way to say it. Yeah.
Okay. So it's comparable to that.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Water does have memory, though, where it'll remember a shape. And that's even over my head for a lot of that study, because it is nuts. It seems like magic.
Well, you know, it's just all vibration and frequency.
Well, I think it is.
I don't know. That's just my Tesla quote that I just fall back on to answer any question you can't answer.
Yeah, but I can give the study link. Basically, it's just saying that they have really, so I was reading her article. Or about her, that was 2021. 2021.
I was just saying, whoa.
And then this university started digging into it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they published their study in 2023 towards the end.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So this is a development of her original thoughts.
All right. Stuff. Good.
So I just thought that was very fascinating. Like I said, the study is, it's a scientific paper. So it reads like.
It actually got peer reviewed?
I don't know if it got peer reviewed.
Okay.
But the National Institute of Health actually published it as well.
Wow. Okay.
So it may have gotten peer reviewed just because there was enough big names associated with it and the lab was pretty big. Mm-hmm. And it's dealing with tree genetics.
Right. Yeah. Nothing too controversial that'll throw off the narrative.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating study that this knowledge is actually encoded. Tons and tons of knowledge is encoded into the DNA. And that when you rip out these systems, that knowledge disappears. Even if you plant the same species back,
right,
it disappears.
Right. Oh, it's like you get some flatworms and you teach them how to do a maze.
Hi, Onay Pagan.
And you cut them in half and those flatworms regrow. They still know how to complete the maze.
Yes.
So
that's that genetic memory.
Right. So it'd be like that, but instead you take the flatworms and you replace them with brand new flatworms. Now they don't know how to do the maze.
They don't know how to do anything.
Right. So it's like that.
Yeah. That's very good comparison.
All right. Thank you, Onay.
Thank you, Onay.
This is a slowly...
Everybody, check out the Bald Scientist on Instagram.
That's right. You know, we're over here at the Crypts of the Corn and the Corn Call. We're building a giant pyramid of knowledge, you know, and every episode is just a foundation building block.
So let's get to this with the paranormal.
Okay.
Talked for 45 minutes and not really brought up anything paranormal.
Well, I mean, it's a new study, and it is, in some senses,
it's very fascinating.
Supernatural,
science.
Yeah.
And like we've said on the show 100 times, the only difference between supernatural and science is understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So, how trees talk to each other for hundreds of years, people knew that there was some kind of communication with trees.
Yeah,
and that was magic.
And not just trees communicating with each other, and humans communicating with trees.
Yeah, we'll talk about that too.
And before, I just call back to our when we were on the confessionals with TJ Owens.
Oh, with TJ, episode, yeah.
And he told his story. He's the Appalachian Giant. Mm-hmm. I was being a kid where he knelt down and he just had the urge or the thought to shove his hands into the and grab the grass and close his eyes, and he felt connected. I wonder if he was tapping into those networks like somehow with his...
Or it was tapping into him.
One way or the other, yeah.
So, let's talk about this. Old growth forest. After thousands of years, which the U.S. is very... doesn't have a lot of these left.
Like, what, far west coast, maybe?
So, there are old growth forest trees.
Yeah.
But the forests have actually been killed around them.
Gotcha.
So, even though there are redwoods in spots, all the little trees have been murdered around them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not, it, you took out a giant chunk of the network.
So there's some old growth trees are still there, but forests are pretty well.
In continental U.S.,
yeah,
I would say it'd be very hard to come by. And there's, I know a couple forester guys that would argue with me about it, and that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
I'm not a forestry expert. It's just from my understanding of the subject, what I would say.
You know, it's a lot less than it used to be.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would argue that.
Right.
But no, so over thousands of years, these forests develop information banks more advanced than anything that a normal human could even compare it to.
Mm-hmm.
The closest thing I've seen some scientists kind of grasping at is like the Facebook storage facilities.
Gosh, yeah.
Or the Amazon for storage,
yeah.
Like the data storage facilities.
That are absolutely massive, like unfathomably big.
So the neat thing is that, so with that kind of storage, it requires power constantly.
Mm-hmm.
To either maintain or recall.
Mm-hmm.
With this kind of storage, it doesn't. It freezes
besides
it.
Like sunlight, maybe.
Well, no, it isotopes it. It freezes it in a second.
Okay.
So it's more like you talk about the records. It's just a pile of records laying in a spot. But it takes energy to recall it and to transfer it.
Gotcha.
But to maintain it doesn't take anything. Or very, very little, you know, besides cellular maintaining of cells and such. So you have these giant... information banks.
Right.
That some of them are thousands of years old.
Right.
When you start cutting them, especially clear cutting, that information is lost, or the information, the memory is corrupted.
Mm.
So like forest.
Like closing your computer when you're in the middle of something,
yeah.
And then when you turn it back on, everything's all screwed up.
Mm-hmm. So forests have a lot of trouble bouncing back, even with like... ecological care going into them and stuff like that, where people that really care about what they're doing trying to heal a forest.
Mm-hmm.
We, for hundreds of years, we couldn't figure out why is it so hard to get a forest back to health. Like, we stopped the clear cutting. We brought all the species back. Why is it so hard to get this to happen? Well, this is probably a big chunk of it.
Yeah.
Is that information bank of how to survive conditions in this valley or this mountain or this hill, you know, whatever. It was destroyed. It took thousands of generations to form that information bank.
Right.
And hundreds of species working cooperatively to make a healthy environment. So even if we bring everything back, all the species back, it doesn't matter. There's always that struggle.
Mm-hmm. You can't force it back. It just has to happen how it wants to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you can put the seeds back and you can start, and it's just going to take, you know, hundreds of years, not
10.
Not 10 or 5.
Right.
You know, it's going to take a while.
Well, we live in that time and age where we need it and we need it now.
So with ecology, it's really hard right now because of the funding and stuff like that for these studies.
Uh-huh.
I dealt a lot with politicians and legal people that have no idea what I did for a living.
Mm-hmm.
No idea of what fish mean. Like, you know, a paddlefish is nothing to them.
They're just
versus a green sunfish, right?
Right. They're just slugs on a golf cart that just want money. I mean, basically.
Well, I know. Even the ones that were trying to help us, but they couldn't quantify
environmental
health.
Oh, okay.
They don't understand. You know, it's not their field of study. It's nothing. A lot of them were fine people.
Yeah.
They're just, it's, you know, it's a second language to them. It's different.
Did you just call politicians find people?
The
a
ones
lot of
I was dealing with were like local politicians trying to fight to get better water health.
Hmm. I'm just messing with you. You do it to me.
I know. what was I saying?
Oh, the politicians you were dealing with. Yes.
And it was like judges and stuff like that. Because they, you know, they had to make a decision on how these things went. And they don't know anything about ecology.
So you need to make the argument that
we had to simplify it
for them to understand. Yeah.
And that was the quantified of the quantifiable data we presented with the number,
mm-hmm.
like the QHEI number and stuff like that, which is quantitative habitat, something or other.
Gosh.
Which is a number for habitat quality. And then there's a number for fish. And so it's 1 out of 100.
Right. It sounds like it's, you said it's simplified, but it sounds so much.
When they get it, they just get a number.
Right. Yeah.
It should be 85 and it only scored 50.
Yeah.
50's bad.
Right. Isn't it crazy though to think about, like,
and some of those projects took 7 years to get to that number.
Oh my goodness. So it's a slow, yeah. I mean, nature's a slow moving process that heals
mm-hmm.
slowly. You can disrupt it very, very quickly, but to fix it, it takes time.
So yeah, a that's lot what of I was time. Saying, is that these ecological factors, so these judges, right? They don't want to sit on their docket for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
They want it right now. Like mm-hmm. not saying he's against the, you know, finding this oil spill or finding this or, you know, stopping that. But the way our legal system is designed, it's very hard for these ecological issues to sit on a docket for, so we're going to pause everything for 5 years, judge. You know, we're going to pause everything for 5 years for them to figure out what happened.
Yeah.
Or what's going to, it's just free for all. So if a forest develops long enough, I think it starts to either represent itself as Fae and Bigfoot.
Okay.
Or it produces Fae and Bigfoot as protectors slash gardeners.
Mm.
So I have this idea after I was doing some of this, and I texted it to you so I wouldn't lose it.
Right.
That as a forest develops, it, you know, it starts getting this compact informational, this neural network.
Right.
And we talked about it with fungus and stuff like that. There's so much energy here. And if you look at it as the ecosystem, as an ecological entity, it's one thing, even though there's dozens of species making up one thing.
Intermingling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as a cyanophore from the ocean.
Yeah.
But we recognize that as a single thing, quote unquote, even though it's many living.
It's smaller, a colony.
It's a colony. So why wouldn't this be a colony? Well, it's different species. Well, they're different species.
Right.
Why? It just because the body's huge? Well, yeah. So are coral reefs. We look at the coral reefs as one thing when it's thousands of species of coral and fish.
Right, yeah.
We look at them as one functioning ecosystem, one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what if that is a byproduct of extremely old knowledge banks?
Mm.
That they develop enough, they have enough genetic knowledge that it's like human advancement, just in a different way.
Right.
That we, like no human could build, no single human could build a computer, right? That's all kinds of knowledge that has been over 100 years right now. So 4 generations of people started building chips and started building this. And now, you know.
Making it more advanced, more advanced.
But it's because they started it at where they left off.
Right.
They didn't start from square one again of refining copper.
Right, exactly. Yeah, smelting rocks.
Yes. So what if that's happening? That this projection, this, you know, these animals, or not animals, these beings kind of start developing once they live long enough. What do you think about that idea?
I mean, I can see it being a possibility, especially with how destructive human beings can be. You know, if they know they have to put up a defense system maybe to scare us off or to keep us out of certain areas or to push us away from, even though we see, or we don't see anything, but we hear something, feel something, fear intensity goes up to push us out of an area, but we never see it. Is it really Bigfoot or is it something?
Is it the trees?
Or is it the trees projecting?
The forest itself. How many stories, especially in European folklore and stuff like that, the forest itself
is alive,
is an entity.
Right, yeah.
And you have to deal with it, like the Black Forest and stuff like that, and from a lot of famous folk or fairy tales.
Oh, yeah. A lot.
I mean, and then, like they said, the Aborigines viewed forest as one thing.
As a lot. Well, yeah.
And it just is one thing.
Yes.
It's alive. I mean, obviously, plants are alive, but
well, you know what I mean.
In a entity state.
Right.
That it is a thinking one thing. So when you're in it, it knows where you, like, it knows everything. What's happening in it.
Right, yeah. No, I think there's something to this here.
So another thought I had was scary deep forest entities. So these really weird one-off things that, you know, we talk about, these really scary, especially in Canada or modern day, you know, in other countries, really, really, you know, disturbing things. I had a thought that they could be either entities produced by the system as an immune system.
Yeah, the white blood cells.
Yes, so if something's attacking it, you get a hodag coming out of the woods at you.
Mm-hmm.
You get this entity that is a mirage or a hodgepodge of animals that exist
mm-hmm.
through the system. but aren't fearsome enough to protect it. So it slams a whole bunch of them together.
Right.
It makes an Ozark howler. It makes, you know, all this to just scare you really bad.
Or something that's like perfect for that environment or biome or whatever that they can produce. That makes it bad and scary, but something specific to that colony of trees, that forest or whatever. And maybe that's why there's different types of, you know, Bigfoots we see all around in different 100%. Areas. Where you get the tall, skinny ones, the short, fat ones, or not fat, but, you know, short, yeah. bulky.
Or there's potbelly ones. There are fat ones.
Okay, yeah. I mean, all sorts, the skunk apes in Florida, the big giant ones in northern Canada. I mean, for every biome, there's a little bit different. Is that just natural selection, or is it the colonies themselves projecting that specific creature for that specific woods that fits the best for it?
I have another thought with these very scary entities, is that he could be a type of parasite feeding on these direct systems. That they are either maybe corruptions. If we're looking at more as an informational computer system, they could either be corruptions or almost more viruses, computer viruses. And why they attack humans is they are protecting their food sources.
Mm-hmm.
They are, you know, adding a lot of parasites or, you know, kind of do that, or symbiotic relationships do that, where they don't really care about each other, but they will. They don't want anything eating them. Clownfish and sea anemones. Sea anemone doesn't care about the clownfish.
Right.
But the if a clownfish lays in the middle, a sea anemone will eat it.
Oh, if it lays down in it?
Yeah, that's where its mouth is.
Yeah, yeah.
But butterfly fish will pick apart the sea anemone's nettles.
Oh.
So clownfish will attack butterfly fish on sight.
Yeah. Okay. Huh.
So it could be something like that, to where these really scary entities are like interdimensional or cross-dimensional or higher plane parasites on this thing. And when they get violent with us, like your Wendigos, your Pale Walkers and all that stuff, they're feeding on these systems and you're violating their, violating their territory or coming too close to their food source.
Yeah.
So they come and attack you.
Hmm. So they could be feeding off the actual system
itself.
Yeah. Like the energy it all produces from intermingling with each other.
Yeah. So old forest magic, there's so many cultures have this type of magic where they go and they quote-unquote commune with the nature and all that stuff. I kind of wonder if some of this old magic could be hacking into this system and using its knowledge or its power.
Or its energy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where you are accessing a gigantic ancient library, essentially.
Right.
So we know they remember all kinds of stuff about the natural environment. What if they remember other stuff? They remember, you know... We know that reality is so much more developed than humans can interact with.
They might remember that century when, like, a group of people moved into that area and just, like, wrecked it.
Oh, they would know that.
Right.
If they survive.
If they survived it, yeah. Hmm. So they might have to put up some defense against from that happening again.
Mm-hmm.
Or prepare for that moment again.
So this is why, and my whole thought, I guess, with this, this is why we see fae and odd-looking creatures in decline in America and Europe, mm-hmm. our folklore, our mysterious creatures. But in large old-growth forests, they still have tons of fae activities. And my big example for that is Australia.
Oh, yeah.
Where a lot of their rainforests are, you know, are thousands and thousands of years old.
Oh, yeah.
And they are still full of odd paranormal entities.
Oh, it's things that we still haven't even... Maybe seen once, yeah. Maybe.
One
time. I'm sure there's thousands of things we've never discovered yet.
The bunyip, you know, 85 different things look like get the bunyip.
Name. Fall under that umbrella, yeah.
So what if that's what's happening? And we've had people on the show, like Linda came on the show and shared about their fae encounters with the fae being angry and upset and stuff like that, but they were kind of trapped and they were talking about there's less of them. That America still has some, and then like the fae encounters seem to be very violent, very scary in modern day.
Mm-hmm.
Where we had got her name. With the ant mound where they had the buzzing around their tent. Her dad and said, we'll clean it up when we leave in the morning.
Gotcha. Why am I not Johnson?
It's gone for me. I'm sorry. I'll post about it later.
I'm drawing a blank too right now.
Anyways. So, and then once they talked to it, it calmed down, but it was violently protecting what little area it had left. And
yeah.
She was talking about how that had a mound, and it actually had some old growth forest around it, because when they were clear cutting, they missed that area because the mountain right beside it.
Gotcha, okay.
So what if that, you know,
was its last little stronghold hanging on for everything it can.
So that's maybe why you see these entities out there. And maybe that's why in national forests and parks and stuff like that, there's still disappearances. And the government builds bases out there because they're studying these systems.
Yeah, I was going to say that. What if the government already has been studying them long enough where they can synthetically create these things that the forests are naturally producing?
Sure.
And maybe that's those are the creatures we see with the red eyes.
Yeah.
You know, those could be the fake synthetic ones that were, I guess, just copying that what nature already does. I don't know.
That could explain a lot of stuff with dog man.
And hanging around military bases.
I wonder if humans can interact with this system and cause that before, like, technology. You know, that magic kind of style.
I would bet so. Because what is technology is just, it's bridging the gap between...
It's just magic and science, only difference is understanding.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things our brains are capable of that we just can't really tap into. Like, we know through, like, the MK Ultra experiments and stuff, people can project themselves into other areas. They can see things where they're not at. You know, we can talk. People have been able to communicate telepathically. Maybe we all can already do that. It's just been gone so long, it's lost in our brains, our ability.
So I seen a thing that was talking, you made me, reminded me, about the population.
Yeah.
Then it's one of my alien, like, horror sci-fi things I like reading. My little short stories.
Yeah.
That humans were getting their butts kicked by an alien invading species. Then all of a sudden, humans started developing magic or, you know, ability to shoot fire and stuff like that. So it was, humans all have that ability, but it's shared communally. So when there was too many humans, the amount everybody got was so little, nothing could happen besides, like,
A
miracle every once in a while, or a little odd thing would happen.
We got bottlenecked.
When they killed 95% of the human population, though, humans were left for, like,
they extremely could, powerful. Yeah. We were all wizards.
Yeah. Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
Level 20 wizards.
Right, yeah.
I wonder if something with that. What's your overall thoughts, I guess? I mean, that's kind of, I had it, you know, bullet pointed with thoughts after I sent you that text a couple weeks ago. I just kept looking into it. I'm like, there's something here. And it could use some more refining. And I want to know if anybody at home has any ideas. Please email them in, cryptocornpodcast@gmail.com, to add to this theory, this idea.
Yeah, I definitely think there's something here, especially with it being a relatively new study. But it's something we've always talked about, you know, having the intelligence.
Humans have thought it for hundreds, if not thousands of years.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we're still just rediscovering or redeveloping old, lost ideas that humans already knew about. But
so what if the Library of Alexandria was actually the oldest forest in the world?
Ooh, so it's a metaphor that the library, quote-unquote, got burnt down, but it could have just been a forest fire?
Yeah, that you could, like, put your head into a hole in a tree and it would tell you anything you want to know.
Oh, yeah, I think those existed. That's how they developed the chronovisor.
It was the chronovisor.
Yeah.
Chronovisor was actually just a hunk of wood.
Yeah, it's a burl.
A burl.
A magic, a majestic burl.
A burl.
Yeah.
All right, well...
Yeah, at the end of the day, I think you're onto something here. I would like to hear what your guys' thoughts are at home. But I do believe that there's something to this with the Bigfoot phenomenon and the cryptid phenomenon, just the weird one-off creatures that just should not, I don't want to say they shouldn't exist, but are just not really known in our biome. You know, the bipedal, the hulking, massive, muscly dog men, red-eyed things maybe are coming from something like this. It doesn't always have to be government-made, but it usually is. But I think there's some intelligence here that, they could be tapping into it, or just with the mushrooms, like we talked about the mushroom intelligence, them being in so much abundance. You talked about them, manifesting into things, and with the we didn't even consider all the trees and plants and stuff involved that the mushrooms are also intertangled with. So you're, you know, quadrupling more than that. Everything's alive and everything's speaking everything's just intermingling. Everything's communicating. Everything's interconnected. There we go. It's all one thing. Everything that's living is all one. So if they can communicate together, or if they can develop some sort of natural manifestation to ward off bad things, humans, they might just do that. I can't rule it out.
All right. Well, I've been the great and powerful Mr. E.
And I've been J-Clone 15.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye! Bye.
Hey guys, thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the Jade Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye! Bye.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.